Samuel Jahide, a South African-Israeli writer and researcher based in Tel Aviv. Samuel, a very good afternoon to you. Thank you for joining us on The Home Run.
It's great to be with you.
No, great to have you on board, Samuel. As a writer and researcher who has spent years studying Jewish identity and ideology, let me put it to you. What feels most under pressure right now for Jewish communities in the diaspora right now?
Well, I think following the tragedy in Sydney, one would have to conclude that it is the physical safety of Jews. But moreover, we have to ask ourselves how we really got to this point. Mm-hmm. And that's where I would say the element of ideology comes in. Now, you can, of course, look at Sydney as an isolated case, and you can see that maybe there were significant intelligence failures. We have seen various other terror attacks be foiled in other Western countries over the past 2 years, mm-hmm. and those were caught by intelligence. This one was, of course, not caught by intelligence. We could stop there, or we could do something a little bit more difficult as a community, which is what I suggest, which is really going in and examining anti-Zionism for what it is, which is, in essence, a hate movement. We can no longer apologize or treat anti-Zionism as a legitimate political stance. When we look at anti-Zionism as a distinct movement, whether it was in the Soviet Union who industrialized the movement in the 1960s, or whether it was in the Arab and Muslim world, mm-hmm. or whether it was even in Poland in 1968, or in Ethiopia in the 80s, wherever anti-Zionism has taken hold of the political and social culture of a country, a state, or an institution, it has actually ended in meaningful harm to Jewish life. Not just hostility, but meaningful harm to Jewish life. Mm-hmm. We like to, as Jews, we like to invoke the Holocaust and classical anti-Semitism, but I think it's time that we explicitly name anti-Zionism as a hate movement with enduring consequences for Jewish people and Jewish life.
Having identified that, Samuel, you brought in the word ideology earlier on, and we can clearly see this encroachment into the Northern Hemisphere, or Northern Hemisphere, the West, as you like. Do you think enough has been done to arrest that?
Quite the opposite. I think almost nothing has been done. I think once we kind of understand here that we're not dealing with some, you know, wayward college students who are merely naive about what they're talking about and right. have entered some element of moral confusion that over time will somehow, you know, reality will slap them in the face. I think that this has been a grave, grave mistake on the part of Jewish organizations and just in general the way in which we're thinking. Because what that essentially does is it leads us towards creating strategies that don't target the issue. What Right. it does on the most fundamental level is it basically makes us think that we can, in essence, negotiate and reason ourselves out of this, and that over time, you know, if we just do better PR on behalf of the State of Israel, or just improve the education slightly, that we'll improve this and basically turn over a new leaf and all will look golden again. I think that that's profoundly naive to the time that we're living in. I don't think we're in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. I think that we're in 2025. And I think that over a very long period of time, I'm talking decades, there has been an organized social, intellectual, and academic campaign across the West, which came from the Soviet Union and predominantly and other countries, to infiltrate this ideology of anti-Zionism into elite institutions. And the people that were studying at these institutions are now leading figures in government or in institutions who have the power to now essentially normalize it. And how this was done was by, in essence, equating Israel and the Jewish people with all senses of evil that our modern time represents. And you do this very simply. Israel is apartheid. Zionism is racism. Israel is committing genocide. It is a settler colonial state, which in the theory of settler colonialism means that it's inherently genocidal, which is why the smartest people in the world on October 8th, 2023, while the IDF was still counting bodies and had definitely not entered Gaza, you had professors from New York University, such as Danny Shaw, saying Israel is committing genocide in Gaza. We've heard this term and this slur be used over and over again. I'd go as far as calling it a libel. There was even a conference I attended a few years ago where there was no war, and there had been no war that year. And what was the label that was brought up? Israel is committing a cultural genocide against the Palestinians. Now, I had never heard that term, and it has absolutely no meaning. But when you equate one group of people with the essence of evil of that time, you in essence license, in the supposed name of justice, just about anything can be done to them in the pursuit of the good. And when people are punishing others in the pursuit of good, we've entered a very dangerous period. That is what we witnessed in the 20th century. And I feel that we've lost grip with the lessons of the 20th century today. And by that, I mean the totalitarian impulses. And I think that that can carry some very, very dire consequences, not just for the Jewish community, but for different societies at large, if it isn't nipped in the bud as soon as possible.
Indeed, it can. It's not necessarily, as you've just mentioned, if it can be done for one group, what's going to stop it from escalating and affecting others? But I just want to get back to what you were saying, you know, this ideology stemming from Russia, now how it has now ingrained itself in institutions and in people's minds. Samuel, it is so stained now from what you just outlined. Obviously now the task is to undo this, and where does one start? What are your thoughts on that?
It's an incredibly difficult task because, like I said, it's been a slow moving process for decades. I do not believe that the Jewish community or Jewish organizations and institutions are to blame. Where I think their failure lies was in not recognizing that it was happening when many people had been sounding the alarm. Now, in essence, what needs to happen is that the universities, for example, actually do have laws and standards that apply. Now, whether you pursue that in the academic field itself or you take it legally, like we have seen done in America in some instances, the Jewish community, both academically, intellectually, and legally, essentially needs to now go on the offense. It's not good enough to sit around and say, well, Israel isn't an apartheid state, now let me tell you why, or Israel isn't committing genocide, and let me tell you why. We need to go on the front foot, and we actually need to tackle this. For example, the great issue here is double standards. We saw in the American Congress, for example, that students on American campuses were walking around calling for the genocide of the Jews. And the best response that the leaders of those elite institutions could come up with was that it doesn't violate their rules because it depends on the context. But we know, and we all know, that if that was said about any other minority group on a university campus, whether it was gay people or black people or Muslims, it would rightfully be punished. Because calling for the genocide of a particular group of people should not be protected by free speech. And according to the university's own legislation, it is indeed not protected. So deeper here is asking the question of how did this double standard come about, and how are these people hiding behind this protection? And the only way that we can get to the answer of that and we can start dealing with it is with an offensive strategy.
Leading on from this offensive strategy, as you've mentioned, where the Jewish people now really have to engage the situation and really deal with it. Samuel, do you feel that the Jewish community also has enough support behind it from other societies to take this on? Because let's be honest, this entity we're dealing with right now, it's highly involved. There are many players involved here. So in turn, the Jewish people are going to need this supportive background for it.
I completely agree with you. I think that you're correct in saying that we're up against it. But I do think that the Jews have been up against it many times in their history. And honestly, we've been up against it many times in much more dire circumstances. Sure. I think that the state of Israel, while it needs to respect the sovereignty of other countries, 100%, of course, needs to play a greater role here in that offensive strategy that I spoke about, meaning providing diaspora communities with legal support if necessary. I do think that the Jewish community over the years, and I know it's not as built up in an infrastructure wise in, you know, our country, South Africa, as it is in America.
Okay.
But if we take America, which is the second largest Jewish population in the world, they have organized themselves incredibly well. They are their institutions are very well funded, and they have a lot of powerful people working with those institutions. The problem is that the institutions themselves are not running like advocacy organizations or academic institutes or, shall we say, legal institutes. They're in essence running themselves like businesses and marketing campaigns and PR strategies.
Okay.
And this is not going to work. We live in an era of social media. What that means is that if you're outnumbered, as we are, just by mere fact of the algorithm and how people engage with a video, let's say, that is anti-Israel, it has higher engagement because there's more people engaging with it, then the social media platforms naturally push that video more than another video that has lower engagement.
Right.
We're definitely up against it, but PR and marketing campaigns are just not good enough, and the Jewish institutions need to stop treating the way they operate things as if they're a business, and they actually need to remember the principles upon which they were founded, which are community organizations dedicated to ensuring the betterment, the safety, and the well-being of a community. And they are very well funded, and they have more than enough money, and they have more than enough expertise, and they have more than enough people willing to pledge additional money and additional expertise, sometimes totally for free. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that they are at an institutional level are making the most wise use of this. They're pouring hundreds of thousands, if not millions, into billboard campaigns,
right,
and 1 minute social media reels. This, by, as I said, by the mere, I'm not saying don't do it. I'm saying, but if you think that just doing that is going to exercise out this issue, it's a profound mistake. As I said, in a social media era, given what you said about that we're up against it in terms of numbers, we are not going to be able to change people's minds and reach as many people as we would like to, because we do not have the numbers, and social media automatically works off the numbers. Therefore, we have to develop other strategies within the existing institutions. And that requires working with people outside of our community, people like academics and people that work in these institutions who are profoundly concerned as well.
Right.
Forming a union, in essence, with academics who see the academy being corrupted by specific ideologies and are willing to join the fight. And that's the way in which that's the only way in which I think we can go about it. I don't say it's going to be successful, but sure, I think it has a hell of a better chance than a social media campaign endlessly riding on a daily basis.
Samuel, we're going to have to leave it there. My studio controller here is saying, Michael, stop now. That's enough. We've got to carry on with other items on our agenda this afternoon. But Samuel, thank you so much for joining us on the line this afternoon, and wishing you all the best during this festive season and during this time of Hanukkah, and everything of the best for 2026. Samuel J. Hyde, South African-Israeli writer and researcher based in Tel Aviv. His work focuses on Jewish identity, education, ideology, and public discourse in the Middle East and the diaspora.